This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Good Food Purchasing Program provides tools and resources to support public institutions in shifting to a food purchasing model with a different focus. Advocates and allies are working to spread the program across the country by encouraging cities, school districts, and other public institutions to adopt local policies. Could it work in Cincinnati? There will be a forum Thursday evening to discuss launching the program here. Joining us to explain the Good Food Purchasing Program are Sarah Reinhardt, Food Systems and Health Analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists. She'll be the keynote speaker at Thursday's event. We're also joined by Millard Long, founder of KHI, a food processing company based in Burlington, Kentucky, and Brennan Grayson with the Interfaith Workers Center and Greater Cincinnati Good Food Coalition. Sarah and Brennan and Millard, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Mark. Thank you for having us.
Sarah, let's start off by having you explain, what is the Good Food Purchasing Program?
Sure, Mark. So the Good Food Purchasing Program is an institutional procurement framework, and it helps public institutions, so places like schools, hospitals, universities, senior centers, purchase food that's not only healthy, but also good for the environment, good for farmers and food workers, good for animals, and good for local communities. And I know that, you know, institutional procurement probably isn't a phrase we all hear that often.
No.
So I'll give you an example. If I'm a school district, what I would normally do when I want to purchase food for the year for my school district is I might write a contract that says, okay, what I want is, you know, 10 pallets of red apples. And then different companies will bid and say, well, I can do that at this price. What happens when you use something like a procurement framework, or, you know, a good food procurement framework in this case, is you can start to say, okay, I want 10 pallets of red apples, but I also want them to be produced using environmentally sustainable farming practices. And I want to make sure that whoever produced them, the farmers, the different food producers, also got paid fairly. And I also want to make sure that, that that's the healthiest choice and that ends up, you know, being good for our local economies as well. So maybe we're purchasing from, you know, local growers. So it kind of folds all these different values into the procurement process. And this program was developed in 2012 by the Los Angeles Unified School District. And we now see about a dozen active policies and campaigns in places around the country.
Sarah, why is the Union for Concerned Scientists giving its support to this idea?
So the Union of Concerned Scientists, we're, for those of us who don't know, we're an independent nonprofit that promotes responsible science-based policy decisions. So the reason we're so excited about this framework is because it addresses a lot of the issues that we see right now in our food system. We see a lot of pollution, a lot of degradation of natural resources as a result of industrial agriculture. There's a concentration of wealth and corporate influence throughout the supply chain. A lot of our labor force is exploited, particularly people of color. And at the end of the day, the food supply you end up with really isn't helping us achieve healthy diets. So when we heard about the Good Food Purchasing Program, you know, we thought that has to be something that we support because it has something in its framework to address each of those problems in a sense. And the purchasing power, all things told, of non-commercial food service facilities is just huge. These facilities provide about $150 billion in meals every year, often to some of our most vulnerable populations. So if you're looking for a place, you know, that can really have a substantial impact on our food system using existing food budgets, we really just think this is a great way to do that.
So, Brennan, this would be called what, a values-based food purchasing system? Is that how you would categorize this?
Yeah, that's right. What we want for food on behalf of the community is to look at it for what it is a public value. It's a public process. You know, we have for over 100 years, if we're building a big public building, we call it a public work. You know, we expect that the folks building the building are going to have a quality building and that they're going to pay quality wages that give back to the community over time. And what's so exciting for those of us here in Cincinnati is here's an idea whose time has come, which is for public food. This is, you know, I'm a CPS parent, Cincinnati Public Schools parent, have two kids there, and, you know, we pay for our, you know, taxes, and we pay. So, you know, as a community member, I'd kind of like to have a say in terms of where those public food dollars go. And before this breakthrough in LA, there really wasn't a mechanism for doing that, for having community involvement and using the community standards when it comes to buying our public food.
Millard, how does this connect with the work that you do?
We're a food processor out in Burlington, Kentucky, and we started buying the surplus produce from the farmers in Kentucky and turning it into value-added food products that you could buy year-round. One of my first customers in town was Remke. We private label all of the Remke salsa. And over the last couple of years, we have expanded our operation and our processes to include food service items, which would be 7-pound bags of marinara sauce and hot sauce that would be low sodium and made with local tomatoes from purchased from local farmers that we're trying to sell to the schools in the area.
Sarah, you mentioned the Los Angeles Unified School District. What kind of things have they seen through using the Good Food Purchasing Program?
Sure. So the Los Angeles Unified School District was one of the first institutions to adopt this program back in 2012. And over the last year, we've been able to work with them to get a sense of some of the changes they made and some of the impact they've seen. So the district now directs about 20% of its $150 million annual food budget to local producers, and that has an estimated economic impact of between $48 million and $94 million annually. And more than 220 jobs have been generated throughout the supply chain as a direct result. The program has also helped the district develop healthier school menus, achieve reductions in its carbon footprint and water usage, and secure higher wages and better working conditions for 165 workers in a major food distribution company. And, you know, Mark, keep in mind, there are a lot of different ways that institutions can go about meeting the Good Food Purchasing Program standards. So this won't look the same for everybody, but, you know, the program's flexibility is also one of the things that makes it unique and really effective, because what a school or a hospital system might need in Los Angeles is going to be really different from what one needs in Chicago or Cincinnati. And if you're going to be successful, you have to identify those strategies that are going to work best for you. So that's what we saw in Los Angeles, and the impact is pretty incredible.
Yeah. What kind of health benefits are we talking when you mentioned healthier menus?
Mm-hmm. So a few of the things that they've been able to do in the LAUSD kitchens is make sure that no matter, you know, what changes we see come down the pike in terms of school nutrition, that they remain committed to the standards set by the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act. So their food service department is committed to maintaining sodium targets, so keeping low sodium foods on the menu, and also making sure that whole grains stay on kids' plates. So things like that, reducing the sugar in their beverage options. They've just really, really pushed to make those changes and make sure that no matter what, they're remaining consistent with the best nutrition guidelines.
Millard, economic benefits. Do you see that being a benefit of this type of a program?
Well, certainly. Research has shown that for every dollar spent, the schools spend on local foods adds $1.60 to $3.12 to the local economy. We were producing a contract for Jefferson County Public Schools in Louisville, and I can tell you that with the additional work that we had, we were looking to add employees and to expand our facility to meet the demand and the needs. If we could get more schools signed up in this program, we would definitely be expanding. And, you know, we'd be hiring employees. Farmers would be able to recover surplus produce and produce that they normally wouldn't harvest. And we could make value-added food products. And one of the products that we're looking at here today is a low-sodium or no-sodium hot sauce. If you buy a conventional hot sauce, it has 193 milligrams of sodium per serving. The hot sauce that we make for the schools has zero. And we can custom tailor our recipes to meet the nutritional guidelines of all the schools.
Sarah, Los Angeles, how many other places are trying this?
So this is, you know, it's really expanding at a pretty quick rate. So there are about a dozen different places around the country right now that either have active policies or active campaigns going on, like Cincinnati.
So give me some examples of some of the other cities that are doing this.
Mm-hmm, sure. So quite a few in California. You see San Francisco. You have LA, which is trying to pass a policy in LA County right now, which would really, really expand their reach and their impact. And on the other side of the country, Chicago just successfully passed a policy in their school district, and they'll also be looking to have this expanded to their county over the coming year. So coast to coast, you're seeing this program adopted in different places right now.
Sarah, is it fair to make this comparison, the LEED certification for buildings, only in this case this is standards for food?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to help people think about it. I think one of the interesting things that I mentioned earlier is that, you know, unlike some of the more rigid certification processes, the Good Food Purchasing Program does offer a little bit more flexibility, because when you're talking about something like a food system and a food supply, there are so many moving pieces. So to be able to say, you know, here are a dozen different ways that you can go about meeting this standard, which one can work best for you, I think that's a really important component of this. But in some ways, it is a lot like a LEED certification. You're trying to get a third party to verify that you've made progress in, you know, pursuing these values, and to be able to, at the end of the day, put a stamp on it and say, yes, you know, you've accomplished this.
Now, can something like this be used to enhance animal welfare and humane treatment for animals?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So animal welfare is one of the five different value categories of the Good Food Purchasing Program. And, of course, the other four are local economies, environmental sustainability, valued workforce, and nutrition. So animal welfare relies largely on third-party certifications who can come in and say, you know, yes, your chickens have enough space, and, you know, you've practiced all these different things that, you know, let us know that you're treating animals humanely. And another thing you can do to meet that standard, actually, is to reduce how much industrially produced meat you serve. So a couple different ways to go about that as well.
And let's talk to Clark. Good afternoon, Clark.
Good afternoon.
You can go right ahead.
Okay. My name is Clark. I'm from Clark Montessori. And some of our students did a project involving you about the freshness and taste and quality of food in our school system.
Brennan, you were part of that, weren't you?
Oh, great. Well, Clark...
Brennan. Yeah, he was part of it.
Sure. I met this morning, actually, everyone, with some great students from Clark Montessori, Marcellus Griffin, Terrence McLean, Malachi Lawson, and Azan Williams. And I think folks should write down their names, because these are young men who are really in a position to change things. Were you a part of this group, Clark?
I was not, but they're great guys.
Yes, and they did a study taking some surveys of their fellow students and found that many of them, and maybe Clark, you were among them, were prepared to pay a little more each day for their food if it could be fresh food, real food, and in portions that teenagers actually need to make it through the day. That's why they're thinking about calling their group Food for Thought at Clark Montessori.
Okay. Have you talked with other schools, other students about this, Brennan?
You know, we are just in the process now of engaging the Cincinnati Public Schools and the students and parents in the broader community. So we welcome input and welcome participation in the Greater Cincinnati Good Food Coalition.
513-419-7100 to join us. Thanks for the call, Clark. And let's talk to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about feedback by the school systems to their impact on the community. You don't know, I guess I don't know if my school system is helping the community. I'm a member of the Iowa Farm Bureau, and I certainly would like the farmers to have some benefit here. But I wonder if, say, in Los Angeles, if Sarah has a mechanism where the schools say, here's the impact we've had.
Yeah, that's a good question. Sarah, how do you measure something like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think one thing that I'd like to say even before answering that is that the role of coalitions, so diverse coalitions of, you know, your farmers and your food producers and the distributing companies, teachers, food service staff, parents, the labor force, I mean, having a diverse coalition at the table when you're passing a policy like this is just critical. And I saw it in LA, and I'm seeing it play out like that in different places all over the country. Having farmers at the table to actually be part of this process so that, you know, their voices are there and their understanding, you know, what they can potentially gain from this is just key. It's so important to have all those voices at the table. And then to speak to your question in terms of being able to communicate impact, that's something that that we've been working on, helping institutions communicate the potential impact of this policy. And that's also something that the Center for Good Food Purchasing, which is sort of the hub that helps to collect data and to help implement these policies, that's something that they really strive to do as well, is to help collect the data that can help schools and other institutions start to tell the story of, you know, what will this policy really do for our farmers and for our communities.
Sarah, when a city adopts this type of policy, does it apply to all the institutions that buy food in that city, or just the particular institution that's adopting the policy?
That's a great question. So it can depend. In the case of Los Angeles, for example, I mentioned that the Los Angeles Unified School District was the second institution to adopt the Good Food Purchasing Program. The first was actually a set of institutions that are affiliated with the city of LA. So it wasn't all the institutions. It was probably five or six, and that has fluctuated a little bit. But that can depend, depending on where the policy is and who's at the table. That can depend.
And a lot of the focus that we're talking about today is school districts, since we're using LA Unified as an example. But this is really, this applies to any public institution, correct?
Correct.
513-419-7100. Barbara joins us. Hi, Barbara. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say I'm very impressed with the concept of this program and very excited as it goes further to find out more information about it and how well it works. I think it's absolutely an incredibly good idea. And secondly, for the gentleman that owns the processing company there in Burlington,
Miller.
I wondered if he was aware. I grew up in Hebron, which is not very far from Burlington, and grew up in the 40s and 50s. And I wondered if he was aware that at that time, when I was in my early teens, there was a food processing plant in Burlington, Kentucky, a huge building that processed primarily tomatoes, canned tomatoes, and I believe corn also. And as a kid, I was always fascinated that there would be a food processing company in Burlington, Kentucky. But I thought, what an interesting history that he has located his business there, but it does have some tie to a very successful visit for quite a number of years ago.
Miss Barbara, I did not know that. I only came to Burlington in 1993, but it's very interesting. Last year in 2017, we purchased 114,000 pounds of local produce from 11 farms in 10 counties in northern Kentucky, and it certainly has been a rewarding business for us.
And Millard, one of the things that, as a community member who's part of this coalition, you know, we're in it because we think we can, you know, change the working conditions for folks who are in the fields and in the processing plants. And we understand labor issues. But what we're learning by being part of this coalition is how much potential there is within our economy to revive and recover and restore some of the agricultural basis of our region, that so much of it is driven by corn, and many of our local farmers and others are interested in doing more with their land, and having a large local institution that's interested in purchasing from them can really help them to change how they plan and how they move. And it's been an exciting kind of learning process for us to learn from these farmers about their vision for what a local farm, restored farm economy could be in Cincinnati.
So, Brandon, could this work in Cincinnati, and what would make Cincinnati an ideal place for doing this?
Well, I think anywhere that there's the will to make a change to improve our food system, I think it can work. Cincinnati, you know, we've been told by CPS, Cincinnati Public Schools, that actually the school system buys more food than all the restaurants in Cincinnati combined. So that is a tremendous amount of leverage that the school system has. It has our money in trust, and it buys it. And the neat thing about this process is it brings the community to the table to say, hey, we think if you open up the process and make it transparent, make it clear, make the lines of the, you know, products open to us, that we can help identify who in the market that's already making a product available is doing it in a way that supports the community's values. So we think that the bringing the community into the food purchasing process is going to help add value and help find those folks in the community who are trying to change the food system, because those are the folks who we want getting a priority when it comes to selling to our schools.
Sarah, does adopting this policy, this program, does this lead to higher food prices?
So that's a great question. That's a question that we get a lot. It's a tough one to answer because the policy is flexible, right? So it depends on the routes you take. But by and large, what we've seen from a couple of different institutions, including Boulder Valley School District, including Oakland Unified School District, is that better food doesn't necessarily mean higher prices. One of the cost savings that we've seen can actually come from reformulating some meat recipes to include some combination of a different protein, like beans, that are a little bit less expensive. So there are certainly ways to actually see cost savings from this, like Oakland Unified School District did, but it certainly does require a little bit of creativity, and as Brennan said, where there's a will, there's a way.
Hmm. Does it limit an institution's options for purchasing food?
No, I don't think so. I think it actually expands them. For a lot of schools and for a lot of institutions, right now, the way that contracts typically work is, you write down a set of specifications, things you want to see, and, whoever can meet those specifications at the lowest price gets the bid. So what you actually see is very, very few food service companies servicing a great majority of all the different public institutions in the U.S., so I actually see this a little bit differently. I see the Good Food Purchasing Program as something that actually, opens up new doors and expands opportunities for different types of food procurement.
We get into questions of our price. We try to be as competitively priced with the products that the schools would buy at a food service provider. The issue that we run into is that we pay the farmer a price. We have a fixed price that we pay the farmers for the produce. I could sell the product for less, but that means I would have to pay the farmer less, and I don't think that is the objective. I mean, we're buying the tomatoes and peppers that we buy are harvested out of the field at their peak flavor, and it's a different process than the mass-produced and the corporate farms you would see that are, their tomatoes would be chemically ripened and mechanically harvested. Our tomatoes are hand-harvested, and they're sun-ripened on the vine. I mean, it's a different product, and we're willing to pay the farmer more for that product since it'll have a better flavor profile than the conventional canned products that you would buy.
So what's needed to make this a reality in Cincinnati?
Well, right now we're looking for the Cincinnati Public School trustees to take a vote. The coalition would like to present a report to them sometime over the summer and have the trustees review the report and decide officially that we're going to become a good food provider here in Cincinnati. They've already taken, Mark, we're happy to say, an initial step, which is to ask the Center for Good Food Purchasing to do an assessment of the existing food purchasing practices at Cincinnati Public Schools. So their report's going to come in a couple of weeks. And once the community gets a chance to review it and the school board gets a chance to review it, we hope that they'll see that taking the next and the final step to becoming a good food provider here in Cincinnati is within their reach.
Now tell us about the event you have coming up on Thursday, Brennan.
Sure. Well, we're happy to say that Sarah Reinhart, who's on the line here today, will be in town to speak at length about purchasing power, her recent report. And we also have some speakers from the ASPCA and the United Food and Commercial Workers who will be joining her. The event starts at 6 o'clock with a little social hour and local food. And then the speakers begin at 7 p.m. That's at the First Unitarian Church, 536 Linton Street, this Thursday.
Brennan, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Miller, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Sarah, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
Sarah Reinhart, who's food systems and health analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists, Millard Long, who's founder of KHI, a food processing company based in Burlington, Kentucky, and Brennan Grayson with the Interfaith Workers Center and Greater Cincinnati Good Food Coalition. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition. The producer was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Josh Elstro was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney.